Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to this new episode. Today I'm trying something new by doing my first interview in English. I hope it won't be painful to listen to. And to join me on this little experiment of mine, I'm honoured to be with Niamh Maroney.
Woo!
How are you doing?
I'm glad. I'm so delighted to be with you today. And you said my name right, which is like absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, Reggie. So really
welcome.
Means a lot to me.
I have to tell you that yesterday I watched a YouTube video on how to pronounce it correctly.
Amazing. Amazing. I appreciate that research.
You're very welcome. And thank you for accepting my invitation to participate to my podcast. Do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
I do. I am a bit of a podcast fanatic. I love radio as an art medium. And yeah, podcasts are kind of constantly on. And now more like comedy podcasts, more since the pandemic finished. I don't know what it... Do I need some more lightness in my life now since... But yeah, I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts at the moment, so...
Okay. And which one is your favourite?
My Therapist Ghosted Me by Joanne McNally and Vogue Williams. Do you know this one?
No, I don't know this one.
Joanne McNally is probably Ireland's biggest female comic at the moment. She's just after exploding. She's doing like massive tours. She's been around for years, so like we would have all seen her shows when we were teenagers. She started in theatre, and then she's paired up with Vogue Williams, who's an Irish model, and they're mates now in London, and they just started doing this podcast together. And the podcast, I think it won Raked In Awards last year, and now they're taking it on tour as well.
Okay.
So yeah, it's very, very funny. Yeah, I like it a lot.
I'm already happy that we are doing this, because I already have one new podcast to listen to and comedians to discover. So
nice.
good.
Awesome.
And you also told me that you were listening to my podcast in French.
I was.
I don't know anymore.
No, but this, I haven't listened in a while, but it's nothing to do with you. It's just, I think it's like I need a certain level of concentration, like you know, saying today you're trying something new. So when I have time, when I have a task that isn't too tasking, let's go with that, then I can put it on. And I find it really nice. I love the way you balance things. The comedians you get are amazing, and the fact that there's some kind of gender balance was like really important for me. You know, the fact that you've had some women on as well, because a lot of comedy podcasts are all male, a lot of comedy shows are all male, you know, so I'm always seeking out the female voice in podcasts, in research, in whatever, because that's what I see podcasts as well, is like this research that you can be doing while you're doing something else, you know, and kind of,
And my episodes are quite long, so you need to have a lot of time.
Yes.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
And the balance between male and female comedians, it wasn't intentional.
Okay. You
know, I was like, I'm just inviting people that make me laugh.
Nice.
That's the only thing you need podcast.
Yeah.
That's why I'm choosing you.
Yay.
Let's start the compliments now. We met each other at the Countdown Comedy Club.
Yeah.
A comedy show every Thursday at Time Out Pub in the centre of Brussels. Mm-hmm. This gig has become one of my favourite places to perform. Yay. I love it.
Oh, great.
Because I did my first stand-up in English there, mm-hmm. and I performed 10 times now. I think, because I've played every month.
Oh, amazing.
And sometimes twice a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved it. And you, what do you like about that place?
What do I like about Countdown? I think there's something really special happening at Countdown, actually. And I know that Tristan and I put so much effort into choosing a balanced lineup. Mm. Like, we really, 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 really try to get gender balance. And we try to... always include somebody who has something a bit different going on, whether they've come from really far away from Belgium or Europe, or if they identify in a different way to anybody we've had on stage before. And I think that, like, it might sound like a bit reductive to do that, and at first I was trying to find my way with that, you know, like, how can we be so selective? I didn't like that, actually, but then I see the atmosphere that that creates. And, like, one of our good friends came out on our stage. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had trans comedians trying for the first time. And also refugees coming from afar to see, will they maybe dabble in the future? And I just love that, like, that it's a real place for freedom of expression. And that, for me, is my favourite thing. Because Tristan, I joke, sometimes more of a feminist than me. But maybe it's true. So we make a good team, and that's what I really love. I think the trust between the audience and the performers, and then that the kind of stage that that creates is just really, really, really nice.
And you were asking which pronoun do you want to use, and I was like, oh, it's the first place where people ask that.
Ah.
And I was like, oh, amazing.
It's nice. It also helps for the MC to just not have to have those clumsy conversations. Because say it's not Tristan or I one night. Tristan and I don't mind. It's our club. We're comfortable. We're, hey, you know, we don't mind doing that little introduction. But if we're handing the night over to, like, Austin or Barry, I want them to have as easy as a time as possible when taking over and not having to stress, because, like, they're standing in for us. And so, and also for everybody to just kind of be seen and feel comfortable before they even step into the place. I think it's nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, you did something amazing there, because I'm performing in English, so it's more stressful for me to perform. And I think the second or the third time I arrived there with no pressure, I was like, it's amazing.
Cool.
Because usually I'm more stressed than I was. I was like, okay, but I'm doing it in English, so it should be more stressful. And it wasn't, because of the atmosphere. Mm. It's really a place where you can try new things.
That's the whole point, right? Like, we were missing that, I think, in Brussels, like a place to fail, you know, and that's, yeah.
A place to fail.
Yeah, honestly, because
it's important.
We tried to do it with other nights, and then they turned, like, almost semi-professional, and then the standard became too high, and I was like, I was going crazy, because I was like, I've no where to try my crappy stuff. And that's why I love Time Out as well. And, you know, there is no raised stage. You're on the same level as the audience. It's just cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it too. It's Barry Cullen who created the show.
Yeah.
Then he had to leave Belgium for a few months to study Kung Fu in Morocco.
Yes.
It sounds like a joke, but it's true. I love it.
Yeah.
But when you left, so Tristan Barber and yourself became the new showrunners.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you want to continue on this adventure?
So Tristan and I made an online show during the pandemic called Super Fun Comedy Show, where Tristan and I also run a cabaret together, which is more performance art. So we're kind of into this mad character, you know, Gart Morangi, Mighty Boosh style of comedy, and we have a shared love for that. So we made this online show to kind of road test that before we did anything live. And so we loved running shows together, and then when Barry turned around and he saw what we were doing, I think that's why he asked the two of us together, hey, would you come over and run that? I'm pretty sure. I've never asked him directly, but I would say, because we were always trying to get Barry onto the show doing Mr. Beige and any other weird characters he had, and he came on the online show and he did that for us a couple of times. So it just made sense. And Tristan and I, we didn't even talk about it. Like, the night before I rang him, I was like, hey, what are you thinking about Barry's proposal? He was like, well, like, I guess we're going to say yeah. And I was like, yeah, cool. So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So you did shows online.
Yeah.
How did it go?
It went great, but like, wow, what a test for the ego.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to be honest, when there was nothing else to do, we were getting sometimes 80 people at our online shows, you know. Yeah, we had consistently an audience of about 30. And then we, at like in the good moments, we would have 80. And we were able to get some really amazing comedians. Like we got Jackie Cation. We had a few Comedy Store regulars.
Ooh.
Yeah, like it kind of gave us a platform to reach out to people who we wanted to work with. Rachel Mack, yeah. She performed on our show. Like, just insane things, you know. We were like, let's ask them, oh, what can they say? No. And so they would come and test their new material. And yeah, so it was really cool. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Because I didn't dare to do it online.
Yeah.
I think it was too much for my ego.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah.
But I started the podcast at the time.
Nice.
Because it was a good way to reach people because mm-hmm. they were at home. So it was a good time to reach an important comedian who was like at home, who wanted to talk. Perfect. So let's try. And I sent it a message and he replied to me the same day. I was like, oh, fuck. Now I have to do the interview. Like today, I was like, I will ask her, okay, she wants to, okay, now I have to create a podcast in English. And I'm asking you, are you available on Saturday? Yes, you are. Okay, now I have to do it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I need to do, to have deadlines. Mm-hmm. And when you do, same thing for stand-up.
Yes.
When you have deadlines, there is no way to cancel. Oh, you can cancel, but it's not a good habit to take.
No. But that's also the nice thing about the weekly show, right? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, it's like, oh God, I have to, you know, every week. And then if people are seeing you every week, you have to churn out new material. A week three, people are going to be like, oh, that was boring. You're like, no.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And you have been emceeing too?
Yeah.
Do you like that?
Yeah, MC was kind of my way into stand-up in a way.
Okay.
Because I didn't have the confidence to do stand-up. Okay. So I emceed. And also I was working a lot when we started doing stand-up here in Brussels. So it was kind of my way of keeping a foot in and taking some responsibility for the shows without having to go and write a load of material, you know. Okay. Yeah, I like to MC.
If some listeners are interested in performing in English in Belgium, mm-hmm. Where should they go? Except the countdown, because we already talked about it.
So you can also get in touch with Insecure et Dangereux. That's another show that Tristan and Barry and I and other Barra and Eileen and Sean, God, there's a load of us, we run that show. And we're about to start a new series of shows in the autumn. So watch this space. So there will be more performing opportunities coming up.
Good.
Yeah.
But in September, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay, so I would have left.
I know, we're going to miss you.
I hope.
Yes.
So when I come back, you welcome
yes,
me.
Yes, there'll be a red carpet rolled out.
Oh, amazing. And I saw on your Facebook page that on the 16th of July, you are headlining at the Boom Chicago Comedy Festival in Amsterdam. Or, as you said on Facebook, you are doing 20 minutes of glorious filth. What will you talk about?
Oh gosh, Regis, I'm still figuring that out. Yes, I'm doing 20 minutes. I can't believe that. It's a shock. But I'm definitely going to talk about, you know, my normal topics, gender identity, identity politics. They're the fancy words for, I'll be talking about who I allow into my vagina and who I do not.
Who I allow in my vagina. Love it.
So yeah, and I'm going to try to talk about some personal experiences of my childhood that you've heard me talk about the last time on Countdown, but that's all very new material, so I'm not sure. I'm still working it out. But yeah, definitely gender identity, you know, trying to be single in your 30s. That's kind of, it's a lot of what I talk about.
Okay, good. So lots of different things.
I'm glad you think that there's varied content there.
Yeah, I like
cool,
it.
Cool, okay,
I
nice.
I should go there.
Oh. I'll send you the video.
Oh, yeah. I would like it. Yeah, really. Yeah. So you have done stand-up comedy in Belgium, in Luxembourg, in the Netherlands, in Ireland too?
Yeah.
Good. Am I forgetting other places?
I don't think so. I think that's it. Oh, yeah, Maastricht is in the Netherlands. I always think that's Germany because it's just that tucked in place. No, yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, I guess it doesn't really count, but we put on our own little stand-up comedy show when I was in Jamaica in January.
Okay.
And myself and some other, we did it in the hostel. It was just silly fun. Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah.
Okay.
But that was just for friends.
Okay, but do you see differences between each audience when you go to another country?
Yeah, I have this joke about how I'm not funny in Ireland.
I haven't heard that one.
Okay, good.
Oh, I don't remember it. Yeah. Which is not good.
No, that's cool. Maybe, I don't know if you have seen that actually. Yeah, I'm not, like, so I've performed in Ireland a couple of times and I feel like my humour is now definitely made for the Benelux. Because not to talk bad about my home country, but you know, I feel like Europe is a bit more liberated, so they're easier to laugh at my jokes because I come in quite hard. I don't kind of, you know, warm people up into the filth. I say, hey, you're gonna hear 10 minutes of filthy already, and then we're in, you know.
Okay, that's what personally I really like.
Ah, okay, cool.
Because it's frontal. Here, yeah. I am. Mm-hmm. That's how I am. No euphemism. Or
exactly.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, 100%.
Take it or leave it.
Take it or leave it, right?
Love it.
So they take it in Europe and they leave it in Ireland, to put it that way.
And would you like to perform in French too someday?
I would, yes, because I love wordplay. I already do try some small bilingual things, which already is quite a leap. But yeah, I would like to try in French and then maybe flip it on its head and have the bilingual where there's like English bits in it. Because I feel like there's something really funny about a punchline when it's in a different language, but everybody in the room can understand. And so there's kind of two levels of the punchline hitting. And I feel like it creates a bigger laugh. And that's just so much fun to play with. So
okay. Yeah. Maybe as Paul Taylor does.
Yeah.
Okay. But how is your French?
It's okay.
It's okay.
Are you going to make me speak French?
I just wanted to hear it. Because when you said dangereux, I was like, oh, it's so fun to
okay,
hear it with
okay.
the accent.
All right, let's try a little French if you want.
Qu'est-ce que tu peux dire?
J'essaie en français maintenant, mais je pense, oui, j'ai un grand accent irlandaise quand je parle français.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, personally, I really like it because, yeah, it's something that's different from the others. So if you go on a stage speaking with your accent, people are going to listen to you.
Okay.
You have the focus of the audience, I think.
Do you think so?
I think so.
That's cool.
I really do.
Ooh.
Ooh. And it sounds good.
New discoveries.
It sounds good for French speaking people, so it's a good way to find people in the audience if you want to.
yes, there you go.
If you had to compare Belgian and Irish humour, what would you say? Are we very different?
As people, no. I think we're like, I think Belgian people and Irish people are very laid back and like to have a good time. So we're all out for, like, in Ireland we have, you know, the crack, we call it, like, it's the Irish word for fun.
Okay.
Like, we have that, it's like, you're up for the crack, that's what we would say. We see, like, Belgian people are definitely up for the crack, like, they're easy to get in on the fun, you know.
Okay.
But then in terms of audiences, very different, because Irish people are inherently funny people, right? And they know that. Okay. And sorry, Irish people, but you're hard to impress. So Irish people kind of sit there in the audience and be like, make me laugh, you know, whereas Belgian people are already open to the fact that, okay, we're at a comedy show, you know, like, because Irish people like to think that they're hilarious. And it's true, they are, like, definitely, but makes it tougher as a stand-up to get up on stage.
Okay. And are they hecklers too?
I wouldn't say, no, okay. I wouldn't say so, no. No, I wouldn't say that I've had negative experiences actually in either place really with hecklers. English people then actually have been the most hecklers that I've ever had in Ireland and in Belgium. So I don't know what that says, but you know.
Okay. But yeah. Delia, who performs to at the Countdown, told me that in England, they heckle all the time in England. It's really in the culture to do that. It's because I remember one time at the Countdown, it was quite difficult because lots of people were talking and she was like, that's how it is in England. And I was like, oh, okay, I would never perform there.
Oh my God.
I think it was like a big game on TV on that date. Mm. So it was hard to compete with the Champions League.
Absolutely.
Because even myself, I was performing and sometimes watching the score. So they're saying, okay, let's continue.
All right, yeah. You can't compete with football when there's football on, you know.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
I'm not funny enough to do that.
No. Who do you support?
Chelsea.
Ah, okay. Liverpool. So.
Liverpool. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's how we end this podcast.
Let's just do a football podcast now.
Oh no, I won't be able to do it in English. I don't have any words. The ball.
The ball.
And the net.
The foot.
The foot. I have all the words I need. Okay, and are you going back to Ireland for the Kilkenny Arts Festival in August?
Yes, I'm going back at the end of July. I'm going to actually stay like maybe 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah, and soak up some of that good countryside. But yeah, because you know my other job, comedy isn't my job, but like I'm a producer,
yeah.
So I'm bringing a show from Belgium, and then I'm working on 2 other festivals.
Okay.
So my friends are running a small little traditional Irish music festival,
okay.
And I'm really excited to work on that. And then one of my other jobs is I produce circus, and the circus company is also producing tiny little circus festivals. So I'm going to be it's going to be pretty hectic. And then I'm hoping to just like sleep in a field for the month September and just chill out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you say you are a producer, what do you really do? Sorry if I don't really know.
No, it's cool. It's very funny that you ask, because my friends were over last week and every day when I was going off to work, they were like confused. You know, they were like, cool, okay, bye. And I was like, see ya.
Have and a then, good producing day.
Yeah, have a good production. It's like, oh no, it's not production day. And they're just like even more confused. And then they were like, Niamh, what do you do? And so basically like I manage tours.
Okay.
And like I help artists build their performance work. So like an artist will come to me with an idea and then they'll say, okay, I have this much funding to kick the project off. And then I'll find a director, I'll find a co-producer, somewhere to show the work and more money to work towards that goal. And so kind of together we put the show on and then we take it on tour.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Mm.
And do you like it?
I love it. I love my work. Yeah.
Oh, what's a fast answer to the question? You're like, I love it.
I love it.
Right away, no thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
Love it. It's good. Ah, I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Oh, good. So now that we have discussed about your current affairs, in my podcast, I'm going back in time.
Okay.
So you were born on the 16th of February, if my research are correct. But for your Wikipedia page in the future, I'll need the place and year.
Ah, okay. You could find my birthday online.
I stalked your Facebook page and found a friend wishing you happy birthday on a date. And I was like, I hope it was on a good date.
Yes, you got it right. That's nice. So I was born in a little place called Barking in Essex in London in 1989.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm 33 and my parents were immigrants and we moved back to Ireland when I was 2.5. So 1991, came back to Ireland.
Okay.
Mm.
And what kind of child were you? Were you already funny?
I was a tomboy my whole life, always wanting to like build things and climb the trees and go on adventures, you know, like and working on the farm with my granny and my cousins. I loved that. Was I funny? I don't know. I think I was quite, because I'm an only child. So I think I was always that kind of standoffish, like check the situation before you get involved kind of person. So no, I don't think I was always funny, but I was always a bit outgoing.
And at school, were you the one making jokes or?
Yeah, I was the class clown in school.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about your parents? Were they funny?
My mother is hilarious.
Okay.
She is the wittiest bitch. Like, I'm always telling her, like, it's your fault, do you know? And she knows it's true. Yeah. She's very funny. So I think I do get it from her. She's very sarcastic. She's always searching for the joke in the situation. Always searching for the way to have a laugh, you know? And I like that. Always turning the situation on its head. No situation gets too serious. There's always a way to laugh about something, so.
Your father?
I don't think he has the same sense of humour, but he'd be quite easygoing, you know, so if I was getting in trouble in school, it was never too heavy, do you know what I mean? I was in a lot of trouble in school, that's why I could bring that up, but yeah, so whereas my mother would be like more, she'd be funnier, my dad wouldn't kind of take things so seriously, so
okay. Yeah,
I think there's a kind of balance there, yeah.
Okay. When you say troubles at school, can I ask or?
Yeah, of course. I just hated school, you know?
Okay.
I just hated school. I was bored at school, didn't want to be there.
Okay.
So I got suspended and nearly kicked out and all that kind of crap. But sure, it was grand. You know, it wasn't like, it was just clearly I didn't have much interest.
Okay.
And so my parents were really sound and I started working in the theatre when I was 16. I was allowed to take a couple of days off school a week to go work there.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's what I've been doing, theatre forever as well. So, yeah, my parents were really sound in that. It wasn't that bad. It was just like, I was just bored out of my head, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not for you.
Just not for me. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Because personally, I love school.
Did you? Yeah.
Well, I'm very academic.
Yeah.
You have a structure. You need to follow things. Okay. And I didn't like staying at home with my brothers. So it was like a good place to be.
Run away.
I was like a refugee at school.
Yeah.
Nobody's kicking me. Great. I love it here. Oh, we learn things. Good.
I can close the door and they can't come in. Amazing.
Oh, perfect.
Nice.
That's for my therapist if you listen to it. Did you used to watch comedians on TV or to go see live shows when you were a child with your family?
No, but in my hometown there was, and still is, the Cat Laugh Comedy Festival. So yeah, I guess we started going to see stand-up comedy when we were quite young. Like, I think it was around 14 or 15, I fell in with a group of theatre friends and we just used to go to any kind of live show we could.
Okay.
So we'd volunteer for all the festivals. And even though we're from a small town, it's full of arts festivals. So we would have gotten to see, yeah, a lot of really amazing comedians from the time we were 15. But then you kind of grow out of the volunteering circuit and then you have to pay in. And so then that kind of unfortunately stopped, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, from teenagehood, I guess, we would have seen comedians live.
Okay. And yeah. when you saw that, did you think, oh, I want to do the same? I want to be on stage. And
no, I didn't.
Okay.
No, not at all. I love being an audience member. Like, I'm in production. I never really wanted to be an actor or be a performer per se, but just kind of, yeah, fell into it, I guess.
You studied after drama theatre?
Yeah.
And stagecraft, and you got a bachelor's degree?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, my research are good.
Yeah, well done.
And you obtained a master's degree in contemporary art.
Yeah.
But did you enjoy your studies that time?
The second time, not so much, because I'm a theatre nerd and what I wanted to study was the crossover between visual art and theatre, which is like performance art. So I was doing some kind of really weird off-the-wall performance art, always with a sense of humour. But I was loving it, and so I went to study this contemporary art degree, and they told me very blankly, like, theatre isn't a contemporary art form. I couldn't really get my head around that, because I was kind of aware of what was happening, like, over here in Belgium and the amazing stagecraft that happens here. And I was just kind of thinking, like, that's simply not true. So I lost interest in it and I went kind of back to work. I finished my degree, but not very well. And yeah, I just had figured, right, well, I've paid for it now, so I may as well finish it. But there was no love in it, you know.
Okay. Mm. But did you learn things that are useful to you now?
Absolutely. Okay, yeah, yes, 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 absolutely. Yeah, I learned about, like, contemporary art history. And in my own studies, I learned a lot about, there's actually one Irish group called Dumbelievables. When I went back and researched them, they had actually collaborated with visual artists to make a lot of their stage props. They wear, like, fake heads and fake hands and kind of exaggerated features. And, you know, you go to look at these kinds of things as a teenager and you go, oh, that's hilarious. But you don't think that there's actual artistry behind it. And I know that's kind of ignorant. But then when I went back and I researched that, I found that they had actually done, like, really in-depth research into how to relate these kind of things to the audience. And they had worked with artists from the college that I had studied in. So for me, it was very funny to discover that, like, oh. So I definitely learned a lot. Yeah, for sure.
And in 2007, you founded a theatre company called Devious Theatre.
Actually, it's 2006. I mixed that up because it's so long ago. No, I've written it online in a few of my bios in reply. Because someone said to me there in May, like, oh, it's our 16th birthday. And I was like, oh, yeah, oops, 2006, not...
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry,
my bad. No, it's my bad, actually, so yeah, sorry.
But where does this idea come from to create your theatre company?
So we were still in school, and we weren't allowed to continue with the youth theatre because we were all going to be 18 in the next year. So we started a new theatre company where we could continue to work together, me and my friends, so yeah.
And what do you like about theatre? In general?
Oh gosh, wow.
What makes you love it more than other forms of art?
I love liveness. I love things that are alive because they happen and then they're gone and that's it, you know?
Okay.
And so I love that about theatre because there's something special about, like, you know, Monday's performance will be different to Tuesday's performance because it's all about the relationship between everybody in the room.
Okay.
And that is just so special, I feel, because it's gone afterwards and it never exists again. And I love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. You don't have the image, but when she says that, she has, like, fire in the eyes. Like, oh, it's amazing. I love it. Do you prefer theatre or stand-up?
Oh, this is the question of my life at the moment because... Yeah, it's like, because what would I choose if I had to choose one? I'm hoping to just keep a nice balance. I love the two so much, I don't think I could choose.
But you don't have to choose.
Okay.
Except
for your question. Like, right now, theatre, just the type of theatre that I'm seeing and I'm surrounded by is involving comedy, and I'm more excited by the theatre that I've seen lately than the comedy that I've seen lately. But I'm sure that will change, because I think everything goes in ebbs and flows, and so maybe this summer I'm going to see a load of amazing comedians and I'm going to be like, oh, this is amazing, you know, and yeah.
After that, I think you also started doing voices.
Yeah.
Or live action films and animation films.
Yeah.
How did you start doing that and why do you like it?
Well, I started doing that because our theatre company was actually in the same building as Cartoon Saloon.
Okay.
And they're now, like, world famous, constantly, like, Oscar nominated. And, you know, so we were downstairs and they were upstairs. So when they needed someone to go do a voice, they'd come down the stairs and they'd say, hey guys, do you want to come up and give us a hand? And so then ended up doing it that way and did a couple of things for them. And then word travels, I think, then, you know, oh, look, she's doing that and she's over there now. And so ended up doing it over here a bit as well. But yeah, it was all through Cartoon Soon, who were basically our neighbours at home. Yeah.
Okay. And why do you like that
I think it's so cool to... I love animation. And it's so cool to watch an image and try to emulate a voice for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, there's something really fun about that. Stepping outside yourself and not having to... Like, I can play a six-year-old or I can play a 90-year-old. You know, that's nice.
Yeah, you can be whoever you want.
Yeah, and for me, animation is closer to theatre than live action film because it's more in the imagination. Okay. I don't know. So, yeah, that's why I like that as well.
Okay, and would you like to do more of it?
I would, yeah, but, oh, God, everything takes time, you know? And I tried to get voice reels done and then pandemic happened and then, you know, you just end up continuing doing what you know, isn't it? And so... Okay. This kind of would take a career turn then, wouldn't it, I guess?
Okay. Yeah, you have to choose between many things.
Yeah, right.
In 2014, you toured with a show called Year One.
Year One.
Year One.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about?
Cool. So Year One was... It was an hour-long comedy show that was character comedy. So it was literally just about a girl getting ready to go out on a night out and kind of all the different stages. So it was also playing with this visual art kind of thing where it's like physical transformation from one person to another. I really like that kind of change, like when someone's on stage consistently in front of you and kind of changes from one side of themselves to the other. So I was like, okay, did another piece about that and I wanted then to do something with humour. So that was Year One. And yeah, it was kind of clown comedy, character comedy. And yeah, that toured for quite a while.
Okay. And so you were alone
yeah.
on stage? So like stand-up comedy?
Like stand-up comedy, but totally different because you're doing a character, you
yeah.
know?
And then in 2015, I saw you started working for AK Fringe.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is.
So that's actually a little fringe festival in my hometown in Kilkenny.
Okay.
It's not little anymore. But me and my buddies, we started that in 2015 because working in Kilkenny, there was no platform for locals to show their art during all the international arts festivals. We were just never getting selected, even though we were making, I thought, quite nice work. So me and my friends teamed together. We ended up like just naturally kind of like one was in music, one was in visual art and I was in theatre. And so we came together and we started the AKA. And it's still going strong and they've got government funding now and everything like that. And so
good.
This is the first year I'm not working on it since then. So yeah, it's a... yeah.
When I was doing my research, I was like, okay, I don't know that person. I just know one facet. I don't know how to say that in English.
Fraction? Or... Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, facet. Facet, I think it is, isn't it? Tell us, audience.
Like the stand-up bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
In 2016, you wrote a comedy play called Pooled.
Yeah.
A collaboration between Central Arts and Devious Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
You performed a play with another actress called Andrea Bolger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us more about this play?
Pulled was actually the commissioned sequel to Year One. So it used the same character, Amanda. Basically, like, I was lonely on tour. So when the opportunity came to get paid to write a new show, I was like, right, I have to like bring someone with me. And my friend Andrea at the time was kind of, she was in between jobs, like, did she want to do action or did she want to do produce? And she wasn't sure, so I said, here, look, do you want to do this with me for a while? And so we toured that for like the bones of 2 years, and it was a protest piece against the abortion laws in Ireland.
Okay.
So it was again, it was, so Amanda gets in Year One, she gets ready to go on the night out, and then Pulled is like the next morning.
Okay.
Where Amanda arrives home to find that her friend Michelle has broken into her house to have a one night stand with Amanda's ex-boyfriend.
Okay. Yeah.
And
there is room for comedy.
Yeah. And darkness. And
true.
So like Amanda's concerned about her friend. Did she use a condom or not? Because if not, they need to raise money for the morning after pill because they're both broke. And if they don't get the morning after pill, they're going on the boat to England to get an abortion. So, because abortion was illegal in Ireland at the time.
Okay.
So it was really kind of, for me, it was important to make that work in that moment and tour to all the most tiny rural villages that I could to kind of show this story to these smaller areas. Yeah.
Okay. And was it well received?
It was well received and it wasn't well received. So I was wondering if you found... I was like, I'm going to let Reggie see his research.
I didn't find anything bad.
You didn't?
No.
Wow.
But maybe I'm not good at researching.
We got a one-star review from the stage in England at our Edinburgh run because we were accused of making fun of working class people.
Okay.
But like, you know, I guess... am I working class? Do you know what I mean? I couldn't get my head around that statement because it was really, I guess, you're one and pulled or bulk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Come from places of like personal experience, so yeah, there has been bad reception to it too, but mostly good reception, I have to say. Mostly good reception. Yeah.
Let's concentrate on that.
Yeah, but you have to. I was like, is he going to find the one star review?
maybe if I did better research.
No, that's good. It's been naturally buried.
Yeah. But you performed at the Fringe Comedy Festival in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was incredible and stressful and so much work. But I want to go back, you know. I'm hungry for it again there, yeah. Me and Andrea went, and we went basically on our own, you know. We didn't have the support that we should have had, let's say, from our co-producers. So we were kind of like... Yeah, we were left to hold up a lot on our own. I think we did really well. We sold out our run. We got 4-star reviews. We got a 1-star review, yes. But, I mean, you know, not everyone's going to see the work in the way that you intended to be seen. So that's okay. But we had a great time. But my God, afterwards, were we tired and ready for that tour to be over. We still had to go back to Ireland and do a pile of dates. So, yeah, it was tough going, but it was great. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's what I hear about the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
It is exhausting,
yeah.
But amazing.
But amazing, yeah.
I really want to go there one day because everything is for me. Like,
yeah.
If you're a comedy nerd, you should go there. But I listened to some French comedian who went there. So they wanted to perform there, so they learned to do it in English just before.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, I need to start doing shows in English because I want to perform there someday.
Dude.
So maybe someday I will perform there. Because being in the audience is cool. Being on stage would be cooler.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, that's it. I want to go back. We should, like, I really think that we should create a group and all go together. The guys were talking about doing it this year, but I said, no, I want to plan it properly and go in 2023 and, like, actually, like, make a proper show. Like, actually logos, flyers, you know what I mean?
Okay,
get a nice venue, do a site visit beforehand. Like, actually do it properly. Not just go over on your arse with 50 quid drinking money and see, hey, can I get on your show? And I know that, like, some people do that and that works fine. But I think you have to be cautious, like, when you're going there, because it could be a career faux pas to do it in a wrong way. You know?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're dead right. Because you hear, like, I don't know if you've heard this before, but, like, you hear of, like, French, now more French comedians trying to make it in the English language world and it not going so well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is, when you're hilarious in French, it's definitely, like, it's not the same as being hilarious in English. And so I think there's this kind of presumed thing. And I think you're absolutely doing it the right way. Like, you've been doing it in English now however long and you're still, like... No, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I need to get better in French too, in English. But it's one of my goals in life to go there.
Yeah.
Because when I watch videos of it, I'm like, oh, it's amazing.
And just like the nights out, like I think we went out every night for a month.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And it was just, you're just meeting just the loveliest people who all have the same interests as you. Like that was the cool thing. I was just like, this is just a city full of people who are into the same things as me, you know, and that was really, really cool.
That's what I really like about, for example, the countdown, because you are with people having the same issues, then you have like thinking, how can I make this funnier than it is?
Yeah.
And we can talk about it for hours if you could.
Yeah, I love that.
Same here. Okay, and after that, you started working for Inferno?
Yeah.
As a manager?
Yeah.
What did you do there?
So that's the circus company that I manage.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm still there. They're stuck with me now. I just manage, like there's three fire performers and one magician.
Okay.
Yeah. And now we're called Rogu, so we like rebranded.
Okay.
And it's two guys, Ronan McLaughlin, who's like just an absolute incredible fire and flow artist. And then Guillaume Cousson, who is the magician and also an incredible fire performer. So I book and manage their tours. That's what I do for them. And develop projects with them as well. We do a lot of community work in Ireland and I love that. Okay. So, yeah.
How did you end up in Belgium?
Okay, so...
There is a story. Let's go.
I started visiting here in like, it must have been 2015, 16, with my ex, who is a animation film director.
Okay.
There you go. So then we were thinking, okay, we need to get out of Ireland. There was like, there's just no money in the arts in Ireland, and we were both getting frustrated in our jobs. I was finishing up the commission for Pulled, and I knew, okay, after that, like, I'm going to find it very difficult to find another paid writing job or any kind of paid job in the arts, to be honest. So unless I go back doing youth work, which was also at that time very difficult to find paid work in, what am I going to do? So I was visiting Belgium and I just saw the art scene here and I was like, oh my God, that place is like incredible. And like, even though I don't speak French, could definitely learn it and find work. And then we were like, oh, let's go to Poland and just be poor artists. And then we're like, oh, let's go to the south of France, just sit on the beach. And then we ended up here. So yeah, he had studied here and because I couldn't make up my mind, I said, look, you go on ahead of me now and wherever you go I'll end up, but like maybe please pick Belgium. And so here I am.
And how did you start doing stand-up comedy?
Because I had all of these character comedy shows, mm-hmm. and I had more characters, and every time I was doing a character I felt like I was driving a van or I was having to drive a tour car around and bring all these props and costumes. And then I thought, okay, stand-up is a way to shed all of the bulk, mm-hmm. and still make people laugh. And so, yeah, that was kind of my logic. And I did one show while I was here, just a few months. I convinced a guy to give me 5 minutes. Did terrible. It was in the Black Sheep. Oh, and I emceed and I got the comedians' names wrong and I flopped.
So you were emceeing for the first time you were on stage for doing stand up comedy.
Yeah, and I don't.
It's a very bad idea.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It is.
So I was MC, and then he said you can do 5 minutes, and so I was like, okay, so 10 minutes overall, which is far too much time for someone's first time as well.
Yeah.
And then having to remember the comedians' names, and these guys were like big news. You know, they were just off sellout shows in Edinburgh, solo shows. And so, like, I should have really been trying to impress them. But you're like, I didn't know, do you know? And I was just trying and fell on my arse with it, of course. But then I bumped into someone on the street who was very kind. And they said, hey, we saw you at the comedy there a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh, Jesus. And they were like, no, you were really good. You were really good. Keep trying. And I was like, okay, there's something, like, there. So then that's when I think Barry put a post up on Irish in Brussels and said, anyone want to start a comedy show? And I was like, well, I have production experience, so I can definitely produce it, and then maybe I can MC, and then maybe I can. And so that was kind of, yeah, how I ended up.
And the first time you went on stage, what did you talk about?
I tried to make jokes about, it was...
I like how you say, I tried to make,
yeah,
I love it. Words are very important.
Yes. So the topic was how people greet each other in the morning in Belgium, because I was working on an art residency and the whole thing was in French and I didn't speak French, so I would go in the morning and people would ask me, like, did you have a good sleep? And I thought, this is so weird and abstract. But that's Belgian people, that's the thing that they do. But
yeah,
in Ireland,
it's completely normal.
Yeah, I had never heard this before, you know. Okay. And so for me, this was hilarious. But of course, for the audience, they were like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do.
And, you know. So then I had this whole bit about asking about my traumatic nightmares and how I was dreaming about my mother-in-law coming to visit me in my sleep. Okay. And didn't land. You know, it sounds actually like a nice topic now, like, you know, traumatizing Belgians with my nightmares in the morning. But I just didn't. I was just shit at writing punchlines.
Yeah, maybe it's too hard for a first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Most people make comments about their name or their brother's sister, something very, very... you see that everybody knows. Very easy topic.
Yeah.
But you decided, okay, I am seeing, I'm talking about my traumas. Let's do it.
Let's go. Let's just fall in every way you can. Yeah, and I remember at the end of the night, the guy who was running the show, he said, I think actually this bar is looking for bar staff, maybe you should apply. And I was like, okay.
I love how every comments that you have after bombing is super weird. Like, you can't take everything the proper way. Like, it's, yeah, it's a job opportunity, but after that it's like, okay, what does it mean?
Okay, it means you suck. And you should be pouring beers.
Yeah. Okay, then after this show you became addicted to stand-up comedy, or it took some time?
Addicted.
Or are you?
I don't know.
I was like, you are among us, so you must be.
I think I am, yeah. I think I am, because during the pandemic I craved liveness. You know, okay, it's this liveness thing. I craved the banter with the audience. So I guess, yeah, I probably am addicted. But no, I think it was when we were running shows in the Funky Monkey. Myself and Barra and Barry and Eileen and Sean, and we just had, it was just such a good group of us at the time, and we were just all so new to it, and we were running this crazy little basement show. There was no seats, everyone's standing up, and the stage is only about 4 inches off the ground, tiny stage. Often I had to stand on a stool because it was just this long narrow room. Yeah. I'm 157 for people listening, 5'2" for those in Ireland. But yeah, so that was just so good for me. It was like a punk show, do you know. It was like just this very raw relationship with the audience, and our audience just got so astute that if there was a sexist or if there was a homophobic joke, they would like boo them off stage.
Okay.
And I loved that so much. I was like, fuck yeah. It was like immediate karma, immediate feedback, and that was just that. I got addicted to that atmosphere, and I still crave that, because that venue shut down during Corona and never opened again. And okay, yeah, that breaks my heart.
But I see how you can be pleased that the people react. If there is something racist or homophobic, yeah, they react in a bad, in the correct way,
yeah,
by booing it. But same thing at the Countdown, the audience will be like, the fuck are you saying?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not funny.
Yeah. I do think that there is an element of the Funky Monkey in Countdown.
Okay.
I think that there's some of the audience followed us there, and definitely it's got something the same. Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah.
Good. And how do you create and write your stand-up material?
Oh, I always try to draw from personal experience. Mm-hmm. It's normally in conversation, you know, that someone goes, oh, that's interesting. And it's something about yourself that you don't think is interesting. And then you go, maybe I'm going to make a note of that. And then try to just create lists of things. And then when I have time, sit down and try to elaborate on the lists. One thing I do find fun lately is to just rant into my phone. I find rants actually very good for finding new topics, finding new links, jokes. Yeah, ranting is, I think, actually very, very good. But like to say that I have a method, I don't.
Okay.
I would say that like lists and then a joint and a glass of whiskey for me. I know, I shouldn't say that. I know I shouldn't say that. I know I shouldn't admit that that is my method. But there you go. Because I feel like to loosen up, to be less self-reflective. And I don't know, is it a placebo that I find a spliff and a glass of whiskey? More than that, I can't. Like, so I make those last me my 2 hours writing, you know. Maybe it's a placebo, maybe it's not. But I have a lot of other friends who are writers in different areas and they find a joint definitely helps. But like, I'm the kind of annoying person that I'll be always writing notes in my phone. Like mid-conversation, I'll be writing notes on my phone, and I know that's so annoying for like friends when you're like hanging out, when you're just there like saving a little voice note. But yeah, so it's kind of...
So you said you weren't addicted, but you you stopped the conversation to take notes. Sorry, you are addicted.
Totally. Imagine someone was like stopping the conversation to take a line of coke, you'd be like, that guy's got a problem. But yeah, when it's just an innocent little note, no, that's not addiction at all. Yeah, shit, totally, I'm addicted.
I think you record your performance when you go on stage. Then do you watch it?
Yeah,
do
you, watch it.
You watch it?
Watch it again and again and again, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So far, I haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, because I was recording you the other night and you're like, I don't like it. And I was like, all right, Jesus, but it's your last show here. Like, even I'd like to record it, you know?
Yeah, you send it to me and I...
You haven't watched it?
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, but it's saved.
It's saved.
Don't delete it. Because
I know it's important to
watch. But you have to get used to it. I didn't watch myself till like... I don't even know. Is it like November? And Austin told me, he was like... Oh, like, you. What do you mean you don't record your sets? And I was like, I don't record my sets because I hate watching myself. And he was like, but Niamh, like, you know, how are you going to really improve your jokes with the physicality and the voice matching, like, you know? And I was like, and it took a bit of training to get in the habit of watching myself. And now it's like the first thing I do when I go home.
Okay.
Watch it straight away, take notes, and then watch it again and again.
Okay.
And then it's a reference point for when you're reworking your set. But like that, it took me a while. So I'd say just dive in and try. But because it helps so much. If you can get that gesture down with the delivery, like, you know.
Yeah. I know how important it is.
Yeah.
But so far, I've found excuses to do so. For example, one of my favorite excuses that I like to use is recording adds an element of stress for me.
Yeah.
Like you need to put the microphone or the camera, and it's my favorite excuse so far. But I know it's not a good
one. But then it's like, I'll do it for you. You're like, shit.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll find people to do it for me. No problem.
Yeah.
So it's not a good excuse. Yeah, I need to find another or do it.
Or just, yeah. No, because I like that now. You go to Countdown, everyone films each other. It's super cool. Everyone, all the lads have fancy tripods and, like, you know, that's cool. I dig that, yeah.
Yeah, but the first you asked me, I was like, no. The first thing that comes to my mind, no, don't do that. And then I was like, yeah, it's important. Right? It's your last performance
here.
Okay.
It's sentimental as well, even, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
On stage, you talk about being queer, about masturbation, sexuality. Are those topics always well received in Belgium?
No, actually. You know, I had a very interesting one a few weeks ago where I headlined at Aubassin.
Okay.
Now, was I the right choice to headline that night? Possibly not. But the headliner dropped out, and so someone had to do it, and I really wanted it to be a female, and I needed the practice, so I did it. But it did reap interesting results, because not everyone liked it, and not very often are you so directly told the negative feedback. someone who is quite close to the running of the show came up to me after the show and said, do you know what I heard an audience member say? And I said, no, tell me what. Oh, she's just confused about her sexuality and she's taking it out on us. Now, yes, I am confused about my sexuality. Taking it out on you sounds like the audience isn't having a good time. So I feel like sometimes men feel called out by my work. That's been a very normal thread of all of the art that I've ever made, because it's very feminist, I guess.
I guess, right.
I mean, if it's pro-women, apparently it's feminist, but...
Personally, I think that's what I like, so...
Cool, nice, yeah.
So that's something I've never understood. Like, male comedians talk about their penises all the time.
All the time.
Why can't she do the same?
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting. I want to know.
Right.
For example, there is a comedian in France called Tania Dutel.
Mm-hmm.
She speaks about her periods, about things like that. And I'm so interested because it's something you don't know. So that is interesting.
Yeah.
If you are confused about your sexuality, for me, it's something I'm not used to.
Yeah.
Because I'm not confused. So it's like, oh, how do you think? That's what I like about... Yeah. Stand-up comedy, seeing things in a different perspective.
Totally.
Another way of thinking.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting for me. So that's personally what I like.
For me too. For me, that's why I love it. And I think it's such a great mode of communication, right?
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I guess sometimes it's not so well received. Sometimes people feel too called out or... Yeah, like I am confused, do you know what I mean? I don't claim to have it all figured out, so I thought that was interesting, an interesting feedback. Generally, I think it goes okay, but also, like, do you hear the negative feedback? You know, I feel like that's something that you don't necessarily hear all the time, so I'm glad when I do hear it, you know, because then I go, okay, maybe I can tweak that and make it, if it was too ranty that time, then I need to change that a little bit, but... Yeah, so no, it's not always so well received, I guess, is the...
That's also what people like, so sometimes maybe it's,
divisive?
Yes, I think so. It's good.
If
everybody likes it, maybe it's not the best thing.
I like to stir a bit of shit, so...
That's the word.
Yeah.
Okay, and do you have goals in stand-up, like having your stand-up special on Netflix, performing at Edinburgh Festival or something like that?
At the moment, yeah, I'd love to produce a show for Edinburgh next year. I'd love for comedy to create a bit of a sustainable income. But yeah, I would like to have... I don't know if I need to have an hour-long show, but I'd love to have a duo show.
Okay.
With another queer performer or a straight female. I'm not sure, but I do want to put together a show for Edinburgh next year with this kind of framework, with maybe half an hour sets or something. So that's my near goal, yeah.
Okay.
And that's as far as I kind of look. See if I get that far, and then
when you get it,
we'll see where that goes. Yeah.
What do you like the most and the least about doing comedy?
Ooh, the most. I guess like one of the things has to be the social aspect, right?
Okay.
Like I love the friends that I make through stand up. I love the encouragement between the comedians. Like that's so nice. Yeah, I love that. And I love that, like, now that there's, like, a scene of us in Belgium that have been performing English for so long, we can kind of say anything to each other and we won't get offended.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? Like, and I really like that. There's this trust. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that's very hard to obtain that, because a feedback is hard to take.
It is.
For you, because there is lots of ego.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say something, you really need to trust the person.
Exactly. I hate people telling me what to do. Like, I hate it so much. And I can take feedback from this gang of people. I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
True.
Yeah. Then the thing that I dislike the most is my unpredictable mood. Because sometimes I arrive to Countdown, literally, like, if I'm... going to, like, the new bit about having a grey pube.
Mm-hmm.
I nearly got sick the first time I was doing that. I don't know why. I couldn't pinpoint what it was in the day or the day before that just threw my energy off. I was so nervous. And that happens to me. And I hate that that happens. I wish I could get to that level of comfort where every time it's easy. Now, that's never probably going to happen. But like, how is it so hard sometimes, you know? Yeah.
Okay. So are you nervous on stage?
So, but this is the thing. Sometimes incredibly nervous. Sometimes okay. Totally at ease. It's unpredictable, and that's what I really don't like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you seem very, very confident.
Cool.
As
cool.
far as I'm concerned.
That's good. That's maybe a character.
Okay.
I think there's a good phrase with Yannick. Yeah, which Yannick Jos, he taught me, flick the switch. Just flick the switch and do it. You know, flick the switch and be funny. Flick the switch and forget the nerves, you know. And I think that actually, like, just that phrase, and I know we all know it, like, but just to have it in, like, that, like, that helps me a lot. Just, like, before I'm getting up, if I'm really nervous, like, just flip that switch. As soon as the mic's in your hands, first word, the switch is flicked and you're confident and you're 100% confident, and it doesn't matter what happens in your day, you're just going to get through it. Yeah,
it's very difficult.
It's so hard.
Okay, and what can we wish you for the rest of your career?
No sexual harassment.
Sorry. Oh, perfect timing. I love comedy.
Please.
That's sad at the same time.
Yes.
That's the first thing that comes to your mind.
Bittersweet. I know.
Oh, fuck.
And happiness. Oh, and not to get cancelled. That would be really cool. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I like how happiness comes after not getting
a... Well, not getting sexually harassed leads to happiness, you know.
Your standards are very low.
They're very low. They're very low. The world
I'm not
is
assaulted,
a shitty place.
I'm happy.
Yes, right. The world sucks.
Oh, fuck. So now let's do the last part.
Oh, gosh.
It's called the name dropping. So among all stand-up comedians in the world,
okay,
I will ask you to give me one name for each category.
Okay.
Who is the nicest comedian you have met?
Oh man, that might take a minute.
No problem.
Oh gosh, that's a really hard question. Nicest comedian I've met. Because the thing is, like, it doesn't matter if they're any good or not, right? They could be a shit comedian, but they're lovely people. God, nicest comedian I've met. Do you know who's just absolutely lovely? Is Christos Suk, who comes down to play from the Netherlands sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's just one of the sweetest people I've ever met in my life. He's also hilarious, but he's just so sweet. And then Tommy Tiernan at Edinburgh was just so damn nice to us. Like, we just bumped into him on the street and forced him into taking pictures with us. And he was just a normal dude. Like, how's it going for you girls? Oh, yeah, it's going good. Cool. You know, and just keep the head about you way. And that was it, you know. So I was like, that was just a cool dude. Yeah.
Okay. Which comedian inspires you the most or has inspired you the most?
I think at the moment it'd definitely be Joanne McNally, because she's an Irish bird like myself, and she's a bit of a pisshead. She's very raw, and I really like that, because, you know, just the raw female voice isn't something that's very widespread, even though we think we live in an equal world, we really don't. Yeah. So I feel like I love Joanne McNally's humour, because she just says whatever the hell's on her mind. Like, I was listening back to her podcast like the start of her podcast, and she said, yeah, I've started like lighting candles and saging the house because I'm in my 30s now and I have to find better coping mechanisms than Xanax and white wine. And I was just like, chef's kiss, like, you know, go on, Joanne, like, she is, you know, she is us. And I love that, yeah.
Okay. She sounds just like you to me.
We should be besties. No, we'd probably blow things up if we got to know each other. But yeah.
Which comedian is the best writer?
I think Sam Morrill is an incredible writer. Like, yeah, I just think he's an incredible joke craftsman, whatever, and he can just come at a joke from so many different ways. Some of his jokes are very formulaic, and some of them are very loose and raw. So I think for the moment, Sam Morrill is my favourite joke writer.
Which comedian is the best performer?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Who do I love to just watch? Oh, Bridget Everett. She's an Australian comedian who she does very raw musical comedy, and she wears these big flowy dresses, and she's got the biggest tits I've ever seen in my life. And she goes into the audience and climbs over them, puts her tits in everyone's face. So she spreads joy amongst her audience, but also her songs are so funny, and I just love the way that she uses every aspect of herself in the joke, and brings just a whole other level of comedy, you know, like that other people don't and wouldn't dare to, you know. And she goes there, and she'll like find a 17-year-old dude in the audience and like climb over people to get to him, just to like embarrass the hell out of him, but also give him an amazing time. And so for me lately, from what I've seen, like, she is I think just a fantastic performer. Yeah,
great. I'm discovering new people.
Nice.
I love it. Who surprised you recently? In a good way.
In a good way. Who surprised me in a good way? Oh, there's so many bad ways to be surprised in comedy lately. Well, like, yeah, He Who Should Not Be Named just got his own films. Fucking, I guess that surprised me. Yeah, I guess I am surprised at the lack of cancelling in comedy. Oh, wait, you said in a good way.
Yeah, I said in a good way.
Right, okay, surprised me in a good way. Is it fair to say, like, Tristan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tristan Barber, like, it was so nice. I feel like I watched Tristan go, like, to a new level because we gigged together so much and I see him on stage so much. And then there was one show we did together in Devs just 2 weeks ago, and I literally, and he felt it too. It's like he just leveled up, like, and it's just, I fucking love to see that, like, happening right before your eyes amongst your friends. Like, I thought that was absolutely deadly. To just be there for that was like Tristan just making a fucking brilliant set. And for me, he was the best that night. So that was a really, really cool, I wouldn't say surprise, but like, yeah, nice witnessing.
Now I will ask you to choose between two comedians.
Okay.
And you have to tell me which one makes you laugh the most.
Okay.
Let's only talk about their jokes.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Because the first choice is about two people that you really like, about their personal life.
Oh, shit.
Between Louis C.K. and Dave Chappelle.
Oh, God. That's hard. Are we talking about now or ever?
Ever.
Dave Chappelle, come on.
Ah, I say Louis C.K. really.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I love Dave Chappelle's character comedy. Okay. Like, jeez, God, like, he was just one of the best. Whereas, yeah, Louis C.K., okay, he's always been very funny, but Dave Chappelle and his character comedy, fuck, like, I just, yeah, I look back and I love that.
Okay, but I think for me, the character is less important than the jokes in itself.
Uh-huh.
For me.
Okay.
So, Louis C.K. has the best ones.
Okay.
I think. For me, he's the best writer.
Right, yeah, you're probably right. Oh, God. I hate having to say positive things about him, but... Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay, yeah. It's okay. He's a good comedian. It's a fact. It sucks. There you go.
I wish he was bad.
Yeah, me too. I wish I could hate him on every level.
Between Dylan Moran and Jimmy Carr.
Ooh, Dylan Moran. Yeah, Dylan Moran. One time I saw Dylan Moran live and he made me, like, laugh more than I've ever laughed at a comedy show, and it was just all a set about his family getting a pet dog.
Okay.
And it just made me laugh so much that, yeah, for sure, Dylan Moran.
Between Catherine Ryan and Hannah Gatsby.
Hannah Gatsby.
Ah, the answer was so fast. Okay, between Catherine Ryan and Jimmy Carr.
Catherine Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, Jimmy Carr, it's just not my type of humour. I've met him, actually.
You've met him?
Yeah, I've met Jimmy Carr. He's Irish, you know.
I saw that he was born in
Limerick.
England.
Oh.
He was born in England near London.
Okay.
If Wikipedia is right.
Well, then he's got Irish roots anyway.
Okay.
But lately his family has also turned their back on him from Ireland because he said some really weird stuff about Ireland. Anyway.
Okay.
Like, I don't like this insult humour. It's just not my bag, do you know? So Jimmy Carr, I think, will never be on my top list. But when we met him, he was all right. But he was, like, the exact same as he is on stage. I couldn't believe it. It was like, so, yeah, Catherine Ryan.
Okay. Between Austin Shale and Barry Cullen.
Barry Cullen. You're making me pick between my friends. This is terrible. But Barry, I think, speaks to me more because we're both Irish.
Okay.
So we share this thread of, like, just the desperation of trying to express your emotion in Ireland. And, like, that's what I see in Barry's humour, and I love it for that.
Between Dana and Lisa Del Moitié.
Lisa Del Moitié.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, easy.
And last one, between Tristan Barber and Yannick Joost.
Dude, what are you doing to me? Oh my god, this is so mean. I don't know if I can answer that one.
That's the game.
That is the game. Let me think now. Oh god, I don't know, because there's sets of each that I like and don't like, actually.
Okay.
And when I don't like a set, I don't like it. So I won't. There will be no redeeming factor for me about certain sets from certain people. Fuck, that's tough. Because Tristan and I have also done so much weird character stuff together. Like, we've written a show together. So I'm going to have to say Tristan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say Tristan overall because we write together. We have the same sense of, that was the same sense of humour. That is such a fucking hard question.
Oh, I'm so happy. But what did you write together?
We wrote a show called Love Letters to Satan.
Okay.
And it's a cabaret set in hell.
Okay.
Yeah, where I play the character Love and he plays the character Satan. And we're auditioning for new people to come down and help us run hell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we wrote that show together. And we're always kind of writing that. We started it before the pandemic. We hoped it would be every 2 months. And then the pandemic happened. And since then, we've just... Oh, we've been writing, but we haven't been producing.
Okay.
So we will produce another one, but we just don't know when.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you perform it, you have to send me another video.
Yes.
I would like to see that too.
Yes, yes, for sure. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And last question,
okay.
The usual question for each podcast. Who would you like to hear in the next episode?
Ooh, who would I like to hear in the next episode? Oh my gosh. So, Paul Taylor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the bilingual thing. That
I already made a podcast with him.
Ah, okay, right. So,
you can listen to it if you want.
I will. I'd love to hear someone like Rachel Mack is also one of my very favourites, and she's just amazing to listen to. So I'd love you to interview Rachel Mack, and she's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, she's so funny.
So should I keep doing podcast in English, or should I stop right now?
I think you should keep doing it in English. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah.
Yo. There was no reason to be nervous.
Oh, I'm always nervous.
Yeah.
Okay, so
cool. Thank
you very much for answering
so
all
much.
My questions.
Yeah.
For taking the time, inviting me here.
Yes. To my friend's house.
To your friend's house. Thank you very much.
You're
and
very welcome.
Thank you for everyone who listened to it. Tell us in the comments if it was interesting. And come see Niamh on show, because I wanted to repeat her name to practice.
Nice.
Thank you. Okay, good.
Thanks,
Rajis. Oh, you're welcome. Cool.
Merci d'avoir écouté Humeur Humoristique. N'hésitez pas à donner votre avis, à vous abonner et à le partager autour de vous. Si vous avez détesté, écoutez le suivant. Il sera mieux. Bisous.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.